I'll never forget the first moment when I walked into a cinema. I was hooked from there on.
Hello and welcome back to the Skin On Podcast.
It's been a while.
Yes, sponsored by the Carlton Cinema.
I miss those efforts.
Well, no, today being April Fool's Day, no, we're not sponsored by...
we're not sponsored at all. But if you want to sponsor us...
No, I don't want to.
And buy me nice things. Buy me nice things.
Yeah.
We'll take our payment at Blu-rays. Me, Sam, Philip will prostitute us on so for pretty much anything.
Gladly.
Very nice. Anyway, last 11 days, or the last 2 weeks up until Sunday, was spent J-diffing.
Yes.
And it is there that we shall begin.
J-diffing, shall we?
Is that the phrase, is it?
That's not a euphemism.
No.
J-diffing across the universe.
You quit your J-diffing.
So, best and worst of the festival. Go.
Right. Best. We're going to do a top three.
Okay. As am I.
In third place, The Great Wall of Tiger Sullivan's documentary, which I really, really, really liked. Fabulous documentary. Interestingly, the best Irish documentary was one by Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah,
which I've seen, and it'll play very well on RTE of a Wednesday evening. But there's not much to it beyond its own kind of small story. And it's nicely made, nicely played and all, but those better documentaries. Anyway, but The Great Wall, yeah. I'm not sure if it'll be released, but you should try and get to see it. It's very good. Numero two. A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, because it is fantastic.
Isn't it?
So much fun. And it's gloriously shot.
It won Best Cinematography from the Dublin Film Critics.
And really so, I would say.
Gorgeous.
A beautiful film to watch. I cannot wait to see it again. And that soundtrack, good lord, that soundtrack.
Yeah.
Hello
to Anna Lily Amirpour.
I was just going to say that. But you beat me to it. And number one, where myself and the JDF film critics decided the same on best film, which is The Tribe. Philip's nodding.
I don't have it quite as high, I said it before, I'll say it again, because I deal in cliches. It's a fine film, stark, disturbing.
There's some scenes I still can't get out of my head.
And you never...
A week and a bit later.
Try 5-6 months later. Yeah, if they're not gone by then, they never will be.
I found it kind of extraordinary. And one of the most extraordinary screenings and Q&A sessions after. It was bizarre. But the film is amazing. I thought it was really, really good. Overall, not the greatest festival.
But, we'll come back to that. I'd agree with you. Speaking of The Tribe, I got to interview the director, Miroslav Stabishvitsky, while he was here at the festival. He's one of the nicest interviewees I've ever had.
He's very nice. You see, really nice Q&A as well.
It's always the way, though. The people who make the most contentious material are often the nicest people.
Yeah, he seemed like a top bloke.
Bloke, as they say. Right, my top three. I should specify that I didn't necessarily see all of these at the festival, but these are the top three of mine that played at the festival. Number three, Calca, Lisandro Alonso's film with Viggo Mortensen. That fantastic film shot in the 4:3 ratio. About a Danish army captain who goes to Patagonia in the 1880s with his daughter, and it turns from there into something along the lines of David Lynch meets Samuel Beckett. Yeah, I'm not pitching it at all high, am I?
No.
It was a late addition to the lineup,
yeah.
Which is a pity. They should have had it from the start, but that's released later this month. Number two, my choice, which won the Audience Award, which was The Salt of the Earth, the Wim Wenders documentary.
You were high on this, like you really liked it.
I did. I thought I'd like it. I didn't think I'd like it as much as I did, but it's about the photographer Sebastião Salgado, who has travelled the world taking pictures of all kinds of subjects, but it's his work in the 80s and 90s of certain war-torn areas and of people suffering from war, disaster and famine. Rwanda, Ethiopia, breaking material, and a fascinating subject. Wenders, it starts off fairly conventionally, but then once it gets into the meat of the work and the people behind it, it's riveting, absolutely beautiful stuff.
Yeah, sounds great.
And then my number one choice, a bit of a crossover, Jay. Doesn't happen too often. A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, which was a rewatch for me, and I bloody love it.
It's great. It's really
so
great.
So stylish, so fun, and not a word I use loosely, so sexy.
Yeah.
I will now resign myself to the fact that I will never be as attractive as the average Iranian.
Everybody in life comes to this point, though. Yes. They finally got there.
Yeah, but it's a glorious thing. Debuts go, I mean, that
it's a calling card to have.
They are great. Yeah.
Yeah.
But all that said, coming back to your point, Jadis on the whole this year, iffy.
Yeah.
Better last year, I would have thought.
Yes. Yes, the highs were higher last year.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
This year. And this year's lows were much lower. And
top three for you now?
At three, I have Silent Heart, which is a French drama about a mother who is contemplating taking her own life, and she surrounds herself with her family, and it's nicely small set drama that kind of goes a bit where you don't expect it to do.
And that's what you want.
Yeah, and as a result, it ends up being very, very good, because it's not that kind of old, mopey, dreary drama. It's unconventional, and I can't say too much without ruining
what happens.
But I recommend checking out Silent Heart.
I wouldn't mind, because I'm just looking it up here. It's directed by Billy August.
Yeah, it was really, really good.
The director
came in the middle of four films in a row, and it was by far and away the best of them.
Oh, I think we all had those days.
Then at two, I have Eden.
Ah, the Mia Anson Love film.
Yeah, which is a story about a young Parisian guy who is attempting to become a DJ. He and his friend are into garage, and they're trying to make it in the DJing scene. And his other friends turn out to be Daft Punk.
Of course.
As you do.
Yeah.
But then he's struggling, he has drug problems, and it's a long, sprawling narrative. It's
a bit too long.
It's a good half hour too long, but other than that, it's you know you're in trouble when an hour and a half in, part two begins. And then you're like, oh, good God.
It's like The Hobbit.
Yeah, so.
It's not bad, though. It's very entertaining.
Yeah, it is, yeah. So yeah, I really enjoyed that. Then Tiger Sullivan's Great Wall is number one for me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't think you'd have that high. Excellent.
It's yeah, good. No.
It's fine by film.
It is. It's a cinematic essay. It's like something completely different. It's done with the real art scheme, so it's not, you know, it's not what you would expect of a regular documentary. It's a Kafka poem over images from all around Europe, showing the Europe behind economic walls, or the economic walls that Europe has put up, as well as the physical walls, as well as the political.
It's a beautifully shot film. It's gorgeous.
That's Fergal Ward's cinematography. And him and Tighe's other documentary that was in it, Yixmaloos.
I really liked that. Yeah, that was really, really liked it.
I heard great stuff about both, and I'm sorry I missed them.
Yeah, well, you can't see everything, I suppose.
Yeah.
Duds of the festival.
The duds. Well, let's see. Again, I'm kind of picking from stuff I saw beforehand and what played at the festival. My choice of this, it was a surprise film, Good Kill, Andrew Nichol's latest. And Jay, I don't think you were too hot on this.
This may turn up in my top three, my bottom three, if you like.
I don't dislike it as much as the two guys, and it will not be in my bottom three. But
it's so simplistic and reductive.
It's very obvious.
Extremely.
Yeah.
That's the least of his problems, though, for me.
Yeah.
Like, it is very obvious, very trite, and it's how it deals with.
And as well as that, dull. Really dull. I was bored.
I'm wasted, Ethan.
Completely. It wastes a great cast. I hate.
Yeah, she got nothing.
As a Mad Men fan, I can testify to the fact she can act.
Yeah,
but she got nothing.
In nothing.
I would make a case for The Three Burials of Melquiades and Estrada.
I like the film.
That's my answer to that.
Yeah, I'm not a January Jones fan. Her name is a drag on the ticket.
Ouch.
She is the least of this film's problems.
Yeah. Just really, really reductive. Really, morally, very iffy.
Yeah.
Very troubling.
And not in the good way that it's not.
No.
To attack your conscience. To have its cake and eat it.
The basic story is Ethan Hawke plays a drone pilot. So they're conducting a war remotely. But
the real war is at home.
Yeah. The scope for good film there is there. Like, I mean, the materials are there. Just,
yeah, but Nichol does nothing with it.
You know, a soapboxy script. Odd. It's odd. I hate it. I absolutely hate it.
We'll come back. You'll come back to it, Jay. Yeah, my number two, and I was really surprised at how much I disliked this. Miss Julie.
Yes.
Liv Ullmann's film, which was shot in Ireland, starring Colin Farrell, Jessica Chastain, and Samantha Morton.
It's in my bottom three.
Yeah, it's I thought so. This is the most boring film I've sat and watched in cinema in a long, long time.
It actually pushes out the one that you, I know you will have in yours. Listen up, Philip.
But it's 2 hours of people talking about infidelities and the possibility of infidelities and committing infidelities and then regressing infidelities, and I don't care.
It's awful.
By the end of it, it's just they're interrupting me sleeping.
And the thing of it is, well, this had a good trailer, there's every chance I would have gone to see this instead of the Tribe. And that's an alternative universe I don't even want to contemplate.
I don't. And they keep reusing a piece of Schubert, which has to be the most annoying use of classical music in a film since the overuse of Ligeti's piano in Eyes Wide Shut. This was dismal. But there was one even worse.
Yeah.
But I saw it ages ago, and I hate it that much that I still hold it against it, and it's still the worst film of Jada for me, The Town That Dreaded Sundown, which was...
I'd say this, it's horrible.
It is really...
It says something about really the tree bad. That's in my list that it didn't make my bottom tree.
Okay, go on, Jake, let's hear it.
Well, they've all been mentioned, bar one. Number three is List of Phil.
It's not in my bottom three, but I... It played right into my wheelhouse and did very little with it.
It's horrible.
Great supporting cast wasted against Jason Schwartzman.
Yeah, Jonathan Pryce as the Philip Roth substitute.
It's good fun.
He is good fun. Elizabeth Moss is always good, but she's given something to do. She's given nothing to do.
Kristen Ritter was given nothing to do.
Yeah, no.
It's a cynical, vile, awful film. It's
based around a very hateable character played by Jason Schwartzman.
Yeah, Jason Schwartzman plays a lot of very characters.
Variation on that, though, but there's usually something else there to kind
exactly.
Of,
I mean, there are plenty.
There's not to cut this.
There are plenty
all.
Of films about hateable characters. The problem with this is the central character is too hateable. He's the most repugnant character I've seen in the mainstream film in I don't know
and
how
I
long.
I hated how it was filmed. I hated those awful close-ups.
Oh, it's
I hated the Instagram 16mm bullshitty cinematography. I hated everything about
the faux 70s titles as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, oh god, everything
it
about
was
it.
It was aping Wes Anderson so hard that I'm surprised it didn't pull some.
Wes Anderson knows what the hell he's doing. Noah, get out of here.
He knows how to frame a scene.
That wasn't Noah.
Noah,
that
was
Alex Ross Perry.
Yeah. Please stop making films. But anyway, that was number three. Number two was Good Kill.
Oh, Good Kill. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Good Christ, they should call it. It's horrible, horrible film.
The one redeeming factor it has... Bruce Greenwood.
Yeah, but even he's reduced to stock phrases after X amount of time.
That's the risk of military.
Yeah,
he's not much more of his character than he is when he's Admiral Pike in Star Trek.
Yeah.
He's pretty much the same guy.
Yeah, it's true. It's a supporting guiding light who's tough when he has to be.
He's the only redeeming feature in the quite frankly, a horrible film. And I really like Andrew Niccol. Like the screenplay with Truman Show was one of my favourite screenplays ever and one of my favourite films.
And he directed great
Gattaca,
Lord of War.
Yeah, all fine films. So I went to when my staff beside you, Philip, when this came up and we came and said, oh good.
Because it was surprising.
That was interesting.
And I was like, oh, that's interesting. This could be really good. And then I watched my melting horror going, can we get Snowpiercer? I didn't say that, but I wasn't a million miles away. And number one is All About Eva, the Irish film, which, it doesn't give me any pleasure to say, but this is horrible. And it shouldn't have been the festival. It was badly shot, badly edited, not really finished. Screenplay wasn't finished. It looked like it cost about a tenner. Apparently it cost 50 grand.
Made with money from Kildare County.
It was, I'm sorry, it's just absolute waste. I'm sorry, it was horrible. It was one of the worst ones I've seen at a festival quite some time.
Mm.
So that's all I can say on that.
I didn't see it, but I read the synopsis and I just thought, this sounds like a rejected Glen Rowe script.
Yeah, it feels like that, except worse. Glen Rowe was better written and better shot and edited and acted.
Wow.
It started, like, I was hoping it was better than this. Myself and Ronan Doyle watched it with Mounting Horror.
Hello, Ronan.
Yeah, he's still recovering, apparently.
Yeah. Oh, he ought to be recovering. He ended up missing the Roy Anderson.
He did. Which is an honourable mention for me.
Yes, ditto. He said he's kicking himself out to kick him for it, considering he's such a big fan. But anyway,
three for me is Miss Julie, which takes a absolutely great cast. I mean, you know, if you can't make a film with Jessica Chastain and Samantha Morton good and Colin Farrell as well, then you're in trouble, you know.
Yeah,
and
sadly,
they are very much in trouble. So
it's okay, Jess, I'll forgive you this time.
Bloody awful. It was insufferably long. It just
2 hours.
I just wanted it to
and it
end.
I just
wanted out of there.
Your faces when we came to the quiz.
Yeah, we were pressed for.
Oh yeah, no,
it was funny.
But as bad,
you looked happier coming out of the trolley.
I was. I loved it.
As bad as that was, it does not hold a candle to the cinematic monstrosity that is Ryan Gosling's Lost River.
Which I had a feeling about also, and didn't go near.
Which is trying to be David Lynch by way of Nicholas Winding Refn, and ends up being excrement by way of vomit.
Oh,
I bet you all put that on the post. It is
absolutely horrid, is what it is. It fails on many levels by trying to be multiple films in one. And it's so dull. And so predictable.
Philip, you like this a little bit more, didn't
I
you?
Like it a
Which
little bit more.
Which is not to say you liked it.
No, I don't like it. It is, I mean, most of what Niall says, it's absolutely spot on. It is trying to take on far too many influences, David Lynch being the obvious one. There's also a bit of, what did I say about it? It's Blue Velvet meets the Neil Jordan film In Dreams with a healthy dose of Harmony Korine.
Yeah, no, just
Lord, that sounds like the worst film ever made.
It is saturated with colour.
The problem is, it is saturated colour. It's the way it's shot. I mean, like you say, Refn as well, especially The Only God Forgives cinematography. It is garishly bright.
It is red to Only God Forgives purple. Right, in terms of the whole colour palette.
Yeah. The brashness of the cinematography, I have to give kudos for that. Also, the cast, Ben Mendelsohn is just hamming it up again, and he's having a whale of time, basically playing a variation of Dennis Hopper in Blue Velvet.
Absolutely incredible cast, though. You have Christina Hendricks and Saoirse Ronan in there as well.
And Eva Mendes and
Ian DeCastaker as well.
Matt Smith.
Yeah, it's stunning. How do you get this wrong?
The answer is simple. A script that should never have left Gosling's imagination. It does nothing new.
No.
Nothing. It on is. Any level. No. It's a script problem, first and foremost. Gosling has an eye. He just doesn't know what to do with it.
I'd like to take it out. I've got two things to say. One, you should listen to me, people. Gosling is terrible. I keep telling everybody, I know if you listen, this is your warning. To follow it up, Philip, I've already seen today a couple of defenders saying, people don't understand Lost River. It's great. This is where it begins. Like Only God Forgives, the exact same nonsense you're going to hear from the next few weeks.
It really isn't.
I suspect it's not. And I won't see
but
it, so I don't...
It's nothing compared to...
I wonder
number one.
With a bullet.
The opening gala, The Price of Desire.
Wow.
Which is just The Price of Dire. It is...
Noel is knocking out the poster close tonight.
It is soft focus... rubbish. It completely undersells the role of Eileen Gray as an icon for the 20th century. It basically reduces her to being a woman who can't do anything without the approval of her beau, you know, and it's just it's terrible. It fails in basic cinematography, it fails in the script, it fails in acting, and it particularly has an absolutely horrible turn by the guy playing Le Corbusier, who for whatever reason decides that he's going to be doing a House of Cards style asides to the camera that are both from the future and playing out at the same time as the current scene.
I'm confused.
It is...
Oh man, my head just hurt there for a second.
There's one scene that is a protracted her dancing around in a room to no music, sort of la 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 la. It is... horrific. Soft, it's all billowy curtains and it's terrible. It's a terrible, terrible film and it should not have been the opening gala.
No. Especially when you have things like Glassland, you could easily have put front and centre or almost anything else.
Yeah. Oh.
There's a Circle of Hell where All About Eva and The Price of Desire are fighting it out.
It's sad that two of the three films in my worst were Irish productions. Yeah. It's absolutely terrible.
I'll be honest, I think it's just a reflection. I didn't see very much Irish films, very many Irish films at the festival this year. But on that evidence, I'm kind of glad. No offence to anybody who's listening, but...
Well, you know, Tygo Sullivan knocked out of the park.
Yeah.
I'm glad someone is. Well done, Ty.
He's got a good JDF. But yeah, it's not being brilliant.
No. But Darren Mooney will attest to the...
Yeah, I know.
Just how bad Price of Desire is. Vincent Perez plays Le Corbusier.
Perez, yeah. I know that name.
And Alanis Morissette is credited like really high in the credits. She's in it for about 2 minutes.
Well, you know, you need a star. Hello, it's the 90s calling. They want their celebrity back.
Isn't it ironic?
Don't you think?
It's got two framing devices that are completely unnecessary.
One, two?
Yeah.
Most films make do with one.
So it starts in the,
I don't even want to know,
the President's Day or recent past where one of Eileen Gray's chairs has gone up for sale and has made absolute millions. Then it cuts back in time to towards the end of her life when Le Corbusier is trying to get an old woman to buy the house that she designed. And then it cuts to Eileen Gray sitting, an old, really old Eileen Gray sitting in a room being shown pictures of the house that she designed and asked, is it that? And then it goes back in time to tell the story linearly.
Jesus Christ.
It fails as a film. It is terrible.
It fails to pass the film test, being a film.
And just makes Le Corbusier look even more like a douche.
Well, basically, he is a moustache and twirling it away from being the most arch-villain imaginable. It is horrid.
Personally, I prefer my furniture with the presence of an Hermes van der Rohe. But anyway.
Yeah, we'll move on from there to week's top 10.
Must
we?
In some. Well, yeah, to get away from some of these titles. Yeah. But in some, JDF. Next year, we're hoping for better.
Yeah.
You had some interesting people along, but it feels like there was a waste of some of the galas. And just,
yeah.
We can't even
Could do better, JDF.
Basically, there is no Under the Skin this year.
Or Grand Budapest.
Lovers
Left Alive.
Or Only Lovers Left Alive. I mean, we just can't imagine any of the films we saw being nominated for Best Picture next year, put it that way.
Yeah. No. You can see a few Razzies being flung around.
Oh, dear.
At 10, Shaun the Sheep.
Still hanging in there.
Yeah, well, it's midterm now, so...
Yeah, you'll probably get a boost.
As a result.
You get 21% up.
Yep.
Nice.
So, and but with the lowest weekend gross of any top 10 entry of the year. So, €16,000.
Wow. It's a good week to release a film.
It would have been. Yeah. If Patrick's Day had been released this week, it would have gotten the top 10.
Wow.
Yep. At 9, still Alice.
Still here.
Yeah, up 6%.
I don't begrudge that.
Fine.
Yay, Julianne.
Yes. Indeed.
At 8. Liam Neeson, I'm dropping like a stone. Liam Neeson in Run All Night.
Wow.
Bye bye, Liam. This one hasn't done well. It hasn't done well in the States either, I don't think.
No. It limped over the quarter of a million. It is getting no further.
Is Liam's next one the Scorsese?
No, he's probably done four action films in between.
Yeah, well, that's what I worry about.
Run All Night 2, Taken 7, all the rest of it.
Run All Day, obviously.
He's run all week.
Baby, he was born to run.
And at 7. Focus. 5 weeks in the charts.
Okay.
It's €705,000. That's quite
That's actually quite impressive. I would not have thought that would have made that much.
Yeah, it is the 10th highest grossing film so far this year.
Oh, okay.
And we're only in April.
Well, it will pass. It will make 9 this week. So it will pass into the woods and take the 9th spot.
Cool.
Then, at 6... Seven Son.
Oh,
this
boy.
Looks dreadful.
Straight in at 6. This has had, you know,
toxic reviews.
Yeah, and it's had sort of bad word of mouth since the very, very start. It led to it being delayed and everything.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's just toxic, a sorry word. Then.
It's a pity because this was not cheap. 95 million, I hear.
No, and the cast as well. You know, you've got Julianne Moore in Jeff there. Bridges. Jeff Bridges.
This is a paycheck movie, isn't it?
Yeah. Kind of.
Redesign that kitchen you've been wanting to redesign.
But it does sound like there's maybe a bit of effort somewhere. I've heard the special effects are pretty good. It's just the story is that's the problem.
Dire, yeah, so.
Yeah. Oh, well. Too pity for director Sergei Bodrov.
At five... The Divergent series.
Detergent.
Who cares? Who actually cares?
2 weeks in the charts, dropped 42% this week. It made just under 100,000, so it's at 342 so far. At four, straight in at four, Will Ferrell.
Kevin Hart.
Yeah. Get Hard.
Can we stop these now? Can we just
apparently
stop
this, it manages to be racist, despite starring a black man, which somehow, you know, really shouldn't happen when he had creative input on the film.
Are we supposed to be laughing at the title?
I presume so.
Yeah. Well, none of us are.
Fnar, etc.
Yeah. Arf, arf.
At three, straight in at number three, which is unexpected. I expected this to be...
You're halfway to a good Squidward there. Try that again.
No, it's because I'm not well.
I expected this to go in higher, actually.
Did you?
Yeah.
It's got some pretty average reviews, I'd say. But
it's a SpongeBob movie. The sequel, SpongeBob Water in 3D.
In 3D, yeah.
Then, at two, it's actually in Irish, too, though.
I heard, which made another reason to pass for me.
At two, it's Home in its second week, down 1%.
Yeah, it's holding okay for the midterm.
I'm surprised it's made more than SpongeBob, though.
Yeah, it's clocking its way towards a million. It'll probably get there by the weekend.
Oh, look, animation does it again.
Yep. It's doing really well in the States as well. Yeah, it's unexpected. DreamWorks stock went up because Home did well.
But then again, what competition does it have besides SpongeBob? SpongeBob came out before Home in the States, didn't it?
I don't know.
I think it did, yeah.
Yeah, and Shaun the Sheep wouldn't have made a dent over there. So no.
Paddington's disappeared.
So it's like it's got a clear run.
Well, that's true. And then at one, straight in at number one, 329,000 is Cinderella. Kenneth Branagh's Cinderella, which I quite like.
The only one, actually. I've heard a few people, actually.
We had Sir Ken over at JDIF for the screening of Cinderella. Well, good for him. He was free to turn up and he got an award for it. Does that sound silly?
Oh, no, come on.
I don't know. Just
Belfast Boy did good. You know.
I like Branagh.
Cinderella is...
He's not the target of my ire.
No, Cinderella is very much old-school Disney. It harks back to the whole Disney princess, like 50s, 60s Disney princess legacy, and it plays it very, very well. If you're in that sort of, you know, if that's your type of film, then this will play right into it.
And whose type of film is this anymore?
Niles.
Me. I dream of being a Disney princess, you know, so.
So we've heard numerous times over the last year or so.
Now take off those slippers, they're not glass.
But it's a lovely film in that sense. I mean, so it's not modern.
Lovely always scares me when somebody describes something lovely or nice.
I've heard it's very nicely produced and shot.
The production and costume design is extraordinary.
I'm just glad this exists because it did give us that interaction between Cate Blanchett and that journalist. That's your question?
And it's also done is
all worship.
Green-lighted a live-action version of Mulan.
There's a film I'd actually like to see get a reboot, though, because the animation is less Eddie Murphy and a more interesting villain. Please.
That's it, yeah. I like Mulan. I think it's fine, but it's not as good as the top tier Disney. You know,
I grew up in the early 90s Disney, so I have strong opinions on these things. And it's okay. Nah. It's no Beauty and the Beast. It's no Lion King.
No, it's not. Or Aladdin. Our Little Mermaid. Those four in a row are the way to go.
I still will defend Back of Notre Dame.
Notre Dame is fine. Yeah.
It's a damn good film. It's dark, as Disney goes.
That and the Black Cauldron.
Black Cauldron's rubbish, though.
It's dark as Disney goes.
It is dark, and that's... Well, some
Tim Burton was involved with that.
They had John Hurt as a villain. They still completely bollocked it up.
Anywho.
That wasn't very Disney of me, was it?
Bollocked it up.
Onto the new releases.
Hurrah.
Yay.
So, first up is Altman. Jason, I believe you've seen this.
Yeah, Altman. Yeah, it's Altman. Obviously, is the documentary on the proverbially genius filmmaker Robert Altman. It's interesting in the sense that
now you're talking about lovely being a
yeah, I know.
I'd say interesting, yes.
And watching it, you kind of want okay. It's a fine filmmaker. Let's see what they have to say. And the answer to that is not very much. The framing kind of device to it is asking various amounts of collaborators, actors, etc., etc., directors, what does the phrase Altman-esque mean to you? And they all come up with something, blah, 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 all the way through it. And that's all fine. But the kind of telling of his story, they kind of go, they start from the start when he worked in TV, then they go to each movie that he directed, well, certainly the main, and some extraordinary behind-the-scenes footage of the films as they're being made, some really great, great stuff, and some interesting interviews. But the telling of the story is so bloody dry and matter-of-fact that they reduce one of the kind of maverick kind of filmmakers to a kind of a bland story seems not fair. So you're watching something of this filmmaker's amazing, and he went against studio, and he'd overlap a dialogue, and so on and so forth. And then it's like, and then he did this, and then he did that. Then he did this. If you want to see the footage, it's great. If you want to kind of revel in the kind of films he made and see people kind of discussing it a little bit, great. But just don't be expecting a great film. It's a dry telling of a great filmmaker.
It's documentary by numbers.
Very much so. Very much so. It's a pity. I mean, it's. I had all the ingredients there. I mean, I'd expect a little more kind of Altman raising hell in various stages, but it just doesn't really get into anything. It's nice.
Does it make you want to rewatch some of the films?
Yes.
Though?
I guess it, in that regard, but you just show a clip of Altman films anytime you go, oh, I haven't seen that in a while.
The cover of an Altman
film. Yeah, exactly.
That's true.
It's not necessarily, yeah, exactly. It's not, it doesn't do that documentary trick where you watch something and you go, oh, I need to know more about that. But you like, if you're sitting down to Altman, you probably have a good idea who he is and what he's made, and it will remind you to kind of watch.
But that's a bit of a problem, though, isn't it? I mean, that's got to play to his fans mostly, and there's a lot of this stuff that his fans will already know. So really, the footage, the behind-the-scenes footage, is the only selling point then.
Kind of, yeah.
That's a pity.
Yeah, it is a pity, because I was looking forward to, and then it was kind of after, I was like, eh. And I wasn't even annoyed by it, because it just didn't do enough to even annoy me, you know?
It didn't annoy Jay. Well, that failed.
Well, you know, I wanted something to raise a heckle, even in anger, you feel like they're doing something. But they're not doing anything, it's just bland. Yeah, which is the worst kind of response.
Mm. Next out is a re-release of Blade Runner, the final cut. So
until the next one.
Yes.
Confession time. I've only seen Blade Runner once.
I was going to say, I've never seen Blade Runner. I'm sorry to kick you off the podcast.
No, just the once, the theatrical cut, and it was a long time ago.
The theatrical cut, the one with the voiceover.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need to go to see this.
Yeah, you definitely need to see this.
I would, but I have the final cut on DVD already, so I must.
You need to see that.
Okay.
Yeah, just watch that. Yep.
Thank you.
That's great.
I have a 5-disc DVD and a 3-disc Blu-ray.
Why?
Because I love Blade Runner.
Yeah, but that still doesn't quite explain why.
Because I have 5 copies of Stargate, the movie. So
oh my god, he does. Just
don't let him get bogged down in this. We'll be here for some time.
Blade Runner, if you have not seen it, is a seminal sci-fi. It is one of the best sci-fis ever made.
And the chances of it on the big screen should be taken.
Yeah, it needs to be seen. Because Ridley Scott's probably best film.
And quite Alien.
It's a pair of them.
But, I agree. And if you want to see what Ridley Scott used to do before he churned out the last few crap pieces of garbage.
And before he maims the Blade Runner name by making another
sequel,
one.
Yeah,
he's already maimed the Alien name. Please, Ridley, reconsider.
Stop. Just stop for the love of God, man. But yeah, it's great. It's really great.
Why does she keep running in a straight line? That's all I want to know.
Yeah,
bloody Prometheus.
Then next up is James Napier Robertson's The Dark Horse.
This was a JDF, wasn't it?
Yep, it's.
Which I think I heard good things about, but I.
It is. It's meant to have gotten really good feedback at JDF from the people who saw it. It's about an emotionally charged. It's emotionally charged and inspiring drama about a man who searches for the courage to lead despite his own adversities, and finding purpose. and hope in passing on his gift to the children in his community. So it's,
jeez, that sounds terrible.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah.
I heard it's better than it's ignore everything Niall said. It's good.
Yeah, Niall, stop reading blurbs.
Yeah, well, this is the official blurb as of.
They really need to get a new blurber.
So
that's the job title I want. How do you do it? Philip Bagman, blurber.
It's a New Zealand film, so it consists of the Maori people, and so it's a story of a Maori leader.
I kind of wanted to see this on the news that they're talking about.
Sorry about that.
it's okay.
I reckon I'm back my blurber, and this is my colleague, Niall Murphy. He kills
he's the cooler.
Then another one to show during JDIF is... Der Andersteig, or The Decent One, which is the story of Heinrich Himmler, as told by the personal letters of Heinrich Himmler to his family, and so he has his diary and all the rest, and apparently makes him out to be quite a compassionate figure, which is as one of the
humanizing most, a monster.
Yeah,
tricky.
He was a champ,
but hey, downfall did it. So
I the only reason I didn't see this was because I'm kind of holocausted out. I've seen enough in the last while. I've just like
conjugate the verb to holocaust. Oh dear.
But I've seen show and I've seen Thing last year, that was shown at Stranger Than Fiction, which was
the new Lanceman.
No, it was the one where the documentary that was to be made of the film, like the people that went into the concentration camps force with cameras, the kind of divisions alongside soldiers and record, and they end up Hitchcock kind of sort of footage and stuff. You know the one?
Yes.
Jesus, it's gruesome.
Night Will Fall.
Yes, that was that was the same day as A House That Ceased to Be. That was a tough day. But yeah, I was just I tried to skip it. I'll catch it at some point because I heard the things.
Then the one that everyone will probably go see. Fast and Furious 7, which I'm bolting from here to go see.
Yeah, no, I won't see this time. I haven't seen any Fast and Furious films.
Yeah.
I've seen the last one.
You don't have a fun bone in your body, so...
I don't know, I'm not gonna...
That may well be true.
I'm not gonna see it, but if anybody were to say, I don't know, give me a ticket, I'd say, yeah, why not? I'm sure it's just loud, daft, gravity-defying fun.
The trailer looks like fun. I will say that about it. Although not nearly as much fun as the Mad Max trailer.
But you're either in the camp for it or not, is the case.
No, I'm very much on the fence. I think you'll find. I have no idea what to think.
By and large, the general populace is either in the camp.
Oh, well then, you know me. I'm down with the general populace, me.
Then, big Irish release of the week, Frank Berry's I Used to Live Here. So, a story about suicidal teen. Hard going, I can imagine.
Yeah, very, very good things, though.
Yes, it's getting raves around the place. So.
Between this and In a House That Ceased to Be, jeez, lighten up, fellas.
Lighten up? No. This is Ireland, Phil.
Oh, this is just playing into your wheelhouse.
Lighten up a little. Mark Noonan's Your Ugly 2 is nominated for a European Film Award.
Nice.
Yep. Then, Kidnapping Freddie Heineken.
This sounds ridiculous. What is this?
It's a drama based on the...
this is the kidnapping of the heir to the Heineken fortune.
Exactly. So it's
just called Kidnap Mr. Heineken?
Yeah, so maybe it depends on the...
Which country you're in.
Yeah, exactly. So,
okay.
Same thing. Daniel F. Frailson is directing it. And
oh, dear.
It's Sam Worthington.
Oh, dear.
And Anthony Hopkins. Yolanta Cabu.
It's been a while since Anthony had a...
Yeah, well, you know, just in general terms, Daniel Edfordson directed the last two Swedish versions of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo trilogy.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, the third one's actually okay, the second one's terrible.
Then, we have Something Must Break.
My patience, but go on.
Gritty story taking place in Stockholm about passionate love affair between self-abusive Sebastian, who wants to be a woman, and the easygoing Andreas, who is certainly not gay.
Sounds like a...
stop reading the blurbs.
Yeah, this is... I'll move on. Next
the blurber.
Is The Water Diviner, which played at JDIF.
As well. Russell Crowe in town.
Russell Crowe's in town, so this is a World War I epic, because it's what it's aiming for, is epic sort of scale.
Does
so
it achieve it?
It has battle scenes that rival Saving Private Ryan.
Really?
Well, that are aping Save Private Ryan.
So the blurb says.
No. It's got fairly good and hardcore battle scenes. It's got a love story that is nothing but predictable, and it's got a search for a father for his sons that were killed at Gallipoli in 1948.
It's a worthy story.
So it's a It's very much an Australian story, and it's well directed by Russell Crowe. It's a little on the nose. It's a little tonally imbalanced, but it's very much a worth watching type film.
Well, good, but I doubt Peter Weir is losing any sleep.
No, but you can't compare it to Gallipoli. Gallipoli is just brilliant.
Yeah.
And this isn't?
This is not brilliant. It's
but
just,
it's probably tells a different story. There's different
good.
Things in it.
You know?
It's just rather good.
Yeah, and so that's
not,
all you want.
It's not rather too great, bad, it's just though. Rather good.
Okay.
Jolly good show. You know.
Spiffy.
Yes. Then, While We're Young. Boys.
Yeah.
Yeah, we saw this. There's a lot of... See, Jadeve as well. It has to, I suppose, put up with what it gets. And it gets very... Films that are coming out very soon afterwards. I like this more than Jay.
Yeah.
I like everything more than Jay.
No, that's not true.
No?
The Tribe.
Yeah, miserable dramas. Jay's
and the thing is, While We're Young is not miserable. It's quite light-hearted. It's the new Noah Baumbach and stars Ben Stiller and Naomi Watts as a couple who are... Well, they're slowly realising they're starting to get on in years, and this is no more highlighted to them than when they meet a young... For lack of a better word, they're hipsters. A young couple played by Amanda Seyfried and Adam Driver. And they basically try and ape these two.
Yeah.
Now, how much you get into this is... Well, it depends on a few things. First of all, how much you like the cast. I like that cast.
I like the cast, don't like the characters.
I like Stiller's and Watts' characters. Because they're... You can identify with them to some extent. They're kind of stifled. They're stifled. They're trying to... You know, they're realizing that they're in their 40s now and life has passed them by to a certain extent. Again, though, if how you relate to the other two characters, well, I have my own feelings on those kinds of people, but don't we all? So,
yeah. I found everybody in it, almost without exception, insufferable. Rich, privileged idiots.
I didn't think that quite so much, but it's the kind of film where the young couple... Everything is handmade. Their desks, their own food.
Bicycles on the ceiling, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, fixie bikes,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah,
tattoos everywhere, that kind of thing. It actually has an interesting little plot in that it starts off with this kind of identity crisis and then spins into something else. Actually, a little bit of a mystery.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of peters out at the end. But I give it a pass because I like the performances. Charles Grodin is
excellent, he's very good.
In it. And it gets a few sharp barbs in.
Two things.
It's Baumbach's best in a while for me.
Well,
which isn't hard.
No. Two things for me. One, American Dad did the exact same story with an episode. Exactly the same. I did it with funnier lines. Two, Grodin's fine, I think, but the rest of them just irritated and irritated to the point. But it did get a bounce. It got a half star up because Listen Up, Philip was so bad. So it actually felt a little less appalling.
Wow.
So there you go.
Well, there
still,
you go.
Still meh for me. But
again,
you know.
I think it depends on how much you like or relate to the characters.
Yeah.
I like Stiller and Watts, the other two. Well,
yeah.
They're there to be annoying anyway.
Okay, and on that bombshell, we'll leave it there for the week.
Very good.
Bye.